this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Morgan Lyon-Cotty in the political center, filling in for Natalie Gochner. On my left, we have Jim DeBacchus.
Proudly on the left.
And on the right, we have Dan McKay.
Unabashedly on the right.
Unabashedly.
You're bashed.
And pride. I'm loving it. I'm loving it already. Okay, let's start with healthcare. We have so much going on. We have an executive order. We have bipartisan senators and representatives talking about their striking deals. But let's talk about the politics of this here in Utah, how people are reacting and how it's going to affect our state. So we had a poll in January with the Hinckley and the Salt Lake Tribune that showed 55% of Utahns wanted parts of Obamacare to remain in place. But President Trump was talking about, in fact, on Monday, he had a sort of an impromptu press conference, and when it reminded me of The Lion King, that might show what stage of life I'm in, when Scar is saying, don't say Mufasa, you can't say his name, because Trump was saying, don't talk about Obamacare, it's dead, it's not even a thing anymore. So, Jim, you have a wry smile. Let's hear it.
I love our gutless Washington delegation. They are the most gutless crowd humanly imaginable because they got nothing to say about Trump care. They dare not say it because the people want it. And guess what? The Trump delegates, the Trump part of their party, doesn't want it. So what do? They're down in their caves. Mia is off being... listening to poll groups and doing polling, and so is they're all calculating because they got no soul. They have no core. People of Utah clearly want the protections of Obamacare, but that right-wing fringe of the Republican Party doesn't want it, and our legislators and our D.C. delegation are just torn because they have such allegiance to this small group of caucus fanatics. It's so much fun to watch if it wasn't so desperate that we take our share of Obamacare.
Dan, I feel like you might have something to say with that.
You know,
first, can
Jim
I
had to
say...
wake me up first with this really loud opinion today.
And I wish we could see hand movements and gesticulations on radio.
Yeah.
That was a sight to behold.
I feel somewhat downtrodden after my inability to express myself using... maybe if I was more...
You were unabashed just a moment ago.
Yeah, to do this. My problem is I've been going through cash flow scenarios in Excel, and that just isn't as exciting as people might think it is. So, I think it's somewhat ironic that Trump is saying Obamacare is dead, right? Just ending the subsidies doesn't mean it's dead. The poll I thought was really interesting, though, from the Hinckley Institute and from the University of Utah, right?
From the Tribune. We partner with the Tribune.
I don't want to give them any credit. I was hoping we could miss that. But let's say that, you know, the poll, they said people want parts, 55%. I know the two parts they all want. They want coverage through the age of 26, and they want pre-existing conditions. Remove those two elements of any other repeal or those kinds of things, and I think you would have a successful Obamacare repeal if you'd left those two alone, the Republicans, back when they were looking at this issue. And that was actually the last bill that came out was the idea of leaving those two elements in place from an insurance coverage perspective, but then returning as far as, you know, value and value decisions as to how we're going to cover people with federal dollars, returning those decisions to the state level. And when that failed, I honestly kind of shrugged my shoulders and said, okay, I don't care anymore. And I know that sounds a little bit ridiculous, but the Obamacare debate is something that every time it comes up now, Trump is going to be super sensitive to it because it's something we, and I'll throw myself in the we did nothing about it when we had the majority on both the House, Senate, and had the White House. And, you know, we ran for 8 years plus on must repeal Obamacare, must avoid socialism in healthcare, yada, yada, yada. And I'm kind of like scratching my head because I honestly don't know where the Republican Party goes anymore at all on this issue. It's like lost to me. And so every permutation of what they come up with, every cute little change, I just don't see it. I don't know where it's going. This latest move by Trump, okay, it's a cut around the fringes, but it will be interesting to see what will finally happen, where it finally goes. I know Jim believes it's the end of the earth, but he believes that every time someone says Obamacare should be repealed. So
one thing you were talking about right there, I mean, you're sort of hinting at this maybe Republican ennui, this there's divisions. And you guys, I know you guys talked a little bit about this last week, but even on Tuesday, we had these two senators come out and say they've reached this deal to restore some of the Obama cost-sharing reduction payments. And in this same press conference, Trump was talking about how he sort of understands where Steve Bannon is coming at, attacking some of these senators, including here in Utah. Do you guys have any updates on this Bannon situation and him saying that he's going to come after Senator Orrin Hatch or everybody but Ted Cruz?
I just love Bannon sitting there in Washington or wherever his office is, calling prominent Utah conservatives and begging them to run against Orrin Hatch. Like, we need these outside Washington people to come in and run our state any more than they do. Give me a break.
Well, Jim, that's cute. However, if you look at every Democrat who's run and running from, running in one federal office or another, they're all relying on, quote, outside funding as well. So the idea that, you know, we don't need or don't want these outside groups, that's such an alien structure. What really is true is there really isn't a lot of giving on the, and I don't know how to say this. It's really just there's a lack of political giving in the state of Utah. It's not like there's a contribution that, you know, people in the state of Utah, you know, set up and say, hey, I'm going to be participating in my political contributions and that kind of thing. And I've only seen maybe a few politicians, avoid all outside money or large corporations, those kinds of things. I'm just going to take Jim's thunder because he's one of the few that I know, you know, has a following to do it. Jim's also fortunate that, you know, most of his population of givers is not participating at 10% for their local favorite religious organization.
Whoa!
So as a result,
got personal.
But anyways, yeah.
Okay, I like that.
Okay, before we move on, though, I also want to talk about this issue with Senator Hatch. We had the 60 Minutes and Washington Post story over the weekend, really going after a couple of elected officials for this bill that was passed in 2016 that took away, they say, some of the DEA's control over the opioid drug distributors. And it really went after Orrin Hatch and Tom Marino on this. And we've seen the effects. Tom Marino has already withdrawn his name to be drug czar. But what are your thoughts on this? Does this affect Senator Hatch?
If they were writing the Constitution today, it would say, we the corporations. And it would be signed not by John Hancock, but by Big Pharma and Big Farms and big, every little and big and huge special interest groups, the NRA, the rest of them. We have lost total control. Orrin Hatch has taken hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars from Big Pharma over the years, and he was paying them back to allow oxycodone into the states unregulated by the FDA. What he did was despicable. And this was a guy that Trump had nominated to be the head of the DEA. 60 Minutes laid it all out. Senator Hatch should probably resign as well.
Well, and you saw that. I mean, it was a pretty overt swipe at Senator Hatch as well as the, quote, final arbiter in the negotiations, right? And it's always, you know, I don't know if this is, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, but Senator Hatch always has his hands involved in the drugs, in the pharma, you know, industry. A lot of the reasons we see a lot of the, you know, the alternative medicines here in Utah is because Senator Hatch has been influential in that process. It will be interesting to see where this goes because there really is a national attention being focused on this opioid crisis, appropriately.
This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Up next, local issues.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
This is Dan McKay on the right.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Morgan Lyoncotti filling in for Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and now we're going to talk about some local issues. And so we may now have a rare issue on which you both agree. We have...
It's not rare.
We now have an
issue.
I
like Jim's shirt.
I like Jim Scheer, too. So our special election for the 3rd District, everybody knows Congressman Chaffetz resigned. We're trying to fill that seat. But earlier in the year, we had quite a bit of debate about how that should be filled, what the election should look like. And one of those opinions was actually a brief written by the Attorney General's office that you both, as legislators, really want to see. Tell us what's going on with that.
Well, the background for everybody's... You did a great job of introducing the concept. Remember, the governor invented his own process. And there's no...
For the election.
For the election. So there was an election, and it was held about how the party should narrow down their prime candidate, whoever their person's going to be on the final ballot in November. And the governor, in a haste to try and meet a deadline for the municipal elections... felt like he needed to invent a process that was not in statute and write the law on how it ought to be done. And so the legislature said, well, I don't think that's right. And Utah Code, Section 67.5.1, if you want to go look it up, how fun is that? Subsection 7. You can go and look at this area of code, and it will tell you that the legislature has the opportunity to have the Attorney General's office provide an opinion to the legislature about how the election process should work and whether or not this is a separation of powers issues. And let me wake up Jim. So, long story short, this memo got shoved into a drawer.
We've just all been lawyered.
Yeah, sorry. So we took this memo, and when the legislature asked for it, the governor's office leaned on the Attorney General's office, and the memo was shoved into a drawer and locked. And then the question became, can we have that memo? The statute says yes. The bar weighed in. The bar said, well, there's a 50-50 chance of there being some kind of ethical concern here. And so there was this whole rigmarole over it. And long story is, the Tribune said, well, we're gonna grandma this thing and ask for it as a public record.
Hey.
And, yeah.
That's something. I feel like you might like the Tribune right now.
I'm feeling
the world is upside down.
I'm feeling quite dirty. but that being said, they grammaed the memo, and they were told no by the Attorney General's office on multiple occasions. So they went to the State Records Committee as an appeal board, and the State Records Committee said, uh-uh. You got to release this thing. And then now we're waiting. We're kind of in limbo because the process that's next is the Attorney General has the right to appeal the decision to the district court. So we are waiting, not with bated breath, because we all know the Attorney General is going to appeal this thing. And the reason he's going to appeal is because he is really just a lapdog for the governor's office. And yeah, I said that. I'm absolutely sick of it. The Attorney General's office has done nothing to forward any independent issue in the state of Utah from its office. And I have had it up to past my bangs. And I'm saying this is ridiculous. I want the Attorney General's office to start running like the Attorney General as opposed to the governor's staff attorney. And that's really the way this office has been treated.
Can you match those fighting words?
I mean,
are you out of words? Are you speechless?
Yes, but not that speechless.
Okay.
Look, here's what: if the governor and the AG release the document, they're going to embarrassingly be caught in a lie.
That's my opinion.
So tell me what do you think is in there?
They're not telling the truth, and it doesn't. In my opinion, it doesn't matter. Okay. This is not what the issue is. The opinion, they say, was only a draft. I think that's probably bull. I think it was a full-born opinion, and I could be wrong, but the document is a full opinion. They didn't tell the truth, and now they are stuck, and now it's all about the cover-up. So they're going to go to court at our taxpayers' expense and fight this out, because they don't want to get caught in a lie. Shame on you, Sean Reyes and Gary Herbert. That's what I say. I don't even care what the underlying issues are. The fact is that they want to keep this stuff secret from the people of the state of Utah. That's not the way government should run and must run. That's my 2 cents.
I think that was a few more than 2 cents, but we will take it. So another issue I want to talk to
you on that.
You really don't know what's in that. Like, you don't care what's in
that. Yeah, I want you to do some crystal ball gazing. What's in there?
It's a blah blah blah. I think Reyes probably just said, you know what, you can't do this, Governor. You can't do it. And they said it was a draft. Well, it probably wasn't a draft. Reyes doesn't want to be head to head with the governor because he's probably running for governor or senator or something.
Yeah.
And so it's in their two interests to keep this tied up, locked up, and keep the sunshine out. Whatever's in there, the issue's long since decided.
The Reyes formula for success has been smile, hang loose sign, and everybody will be happy with me. And I got to be honest, I'm worn out. Like I don't want to hear it anymore. Step up and be your own independent attorney general.
Okay.
Okay.
Strong words from both of you. So the Cook Political Report, so for really political nerds and wonks, know that this is the thing many people look to see, you know what, congressional seats are in limbo. How hard are you going to have to fight to win these seats? They changed Utah's 4th district from solid Republican to likely Republican.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Not interesting.
This is almost as exciting as when the debate commission said, I got an idea. Let's come up with 6% by calling Jim Bennett's family. Sorry.
Once again, I didn't mean
to bring that up again, Morgan. I'm sorry.
Salt in my wound. I am on the Utah Debate Commission, and I believe strongly that everything is above board, and they're amazing.
Oh, please.
Anyway, we're not talking about debates.
Okay, no, we're not.
Although there is one.
Give me a high five. Yeah, okay, we're not talking about the debate.
Sorry, we had to work that in. We had a bet, Morgan. I'm sorry. It was a whole deal.
Okay. You guys are adorable.
McAdams. Look, what are we... it is boring, because he's not only going to win, he's going to win, I'm suspecting, by 15 to 20 points.
Okay,
this is not even close.
Jim, last time we talked about this, you said 10. So why is it 15 or 20
because
now?
Because Mia still won't come out of the cave. You know, she may spend the whole... She thinks she's running against nobody. She simply refuses to talk and meet and communicate with the public, and that's not going to work.
I'm just looking in Jim's bag for some brownies or some other legalized Colorado paraphernalia just to see if he would share. Because at the end of the day, there's no way McAdams wins by 20 points.
Okay, here we go. 20 points.
All right. All right. I'll take that easily. In fact, I'm convinced it's going to be a tough race, but the numbers don't work well for Ben. And I think that's what, if I'm him, I'm looking at the numbers and I'm saying, I'm a great county mayor.
He is a great county mayor, but where else does he go from there if he wants to see political
office? Why does there have to be somewhere else? Why can't public people just stick in a good spot?
Theoretically, if he wants to seek higher office and continue his public career, do you want him to be county mayor for 2 decades?
Okay.
Okay.
As long as the voters will have him, why not?
Okay.
Look, Ben is exactly what Washington needs. He gets me going because he's too conservative. And he gets the crazies on the right going because he's too liberal. That he can sit down in Washington, he can talk to both sides. He's not this horrendous Rob Bishop and the Stuart ideologues. He's actually exactly what Washington needs.
Okay, I want to talk to you guys about something that you both deal with. KUER, Julia Ritchie, did a really interesting story about elected officials blocking people on social media. And she even had Todd Weiler on there talking to someone that he had blocked. So I want to hear about your personal experiences. I know you're both really active on social media. Let's talk about this. Do you think this has anything to do with free speech, or is this just another way of communicating with your constituents?
I'm thinking.
Why would you block someone?
Now you're already on there. Right?
Stop it! You have so many people on. You're much more of a presence than I am. But see, Jim doesn't check the comments in his. I've decided only people who get offended actually read the comments on the things one way or the other. And maybe Jim checks it. I don't know, but. It's the same thing on Tribune stories or Deseret News stories. If you read the comments in the bottom, they're toxic.
Not the Deseret News.
Well,
I mean, the Deseret News ran. They did a story on Hatch, and it was a loving story about the 60 Minutes. I put on a comment that said this: the great Senator Hatch probably has some points that he was doing this to help people in pain. Period. But maybe the $383,000 he got from the drug companies was also a part of his decision. The Deseret News would not print that in the comment.
Online?
Yeah, you know, they, where you do on the Deseret News, they've got like little propagandists there, and if they don't like your comment, they just, it goes. And I'm not talking about swear words. I'm just saying this is a logical, reasonable part. If you're going to have that kind of opinions, Deseret News, then let somebody who has a differing opinion and says it sensibly and reasonably.
Okay,
otherwise, don't even bother.
But what do you do? What do you do about your social media when somebody gets on there and they're just complete? All they're trying to do is troll the conversation, and you know, lead you down some dark alley or that kind of thing.
I send them to you.
Okay.
You know, I just say.
I've noticed my
followers. No, really, though. Do you ever take the bait, or have you ever blocked anybody?
I block people. Yeah. Why wouldn't you? People that are offensive and they're saying, you have a constitutional right to free speech, but if you are being offensive, especially among my crowd, to LDS people, or you're being and I'm not talking about different policy issues. I'm talking about using very vain profanity. I don't think you have a constitutional right to be on Senator Jim DeBacchus's Facebook using pejorative words about women or LDS people or gay people or anybody.
Yeah,
and that's my job
to
make sure that kind of speech isn't something connected to my name. Call it censoring. I'm okay with that.
I avoid. I have never blocked anyone for what they've written. I've blocked people for, hey, here's a pornographic image just so you can enjoy it. Mm. I've blocked that, right? Because I just don't need that in my life. I'm never going to be as attractive as these other people. So at the end of the day, I don't need a reminder of that.
Do they do that a lot? Nobody's ever sends me stuff.
I get it every once in a while. Just because I voted for Todd Weiler's porn resolution or something, you know, that would tend to be where I saw people getting, you know, people getting a little obnoxious. But other than that, like Twitter is kind of thing. But see, my Facebook page is a closed Facebook page because I try to just keep it between my family. That's what Facebook was supposed to be, not a public meetings announcement. And then I have a whole separate page that is my identity page where people can go and learn anything they want. Anything I put on Twitter goes cross-post there, and they're shared between the deals. And this is about as uninteresting as it could be. But my social media life, I try to keep it pretty innocuous.
Senator Jim DeBacchus, join mine. Happy to have you.
Yeah, at Dan McKay. Please don't post porn.
You can post porn on mine, but
see,
I won't like it.
The thing I can't handle, the only time I've ever muted
like
an elected
Cruz
official.
Stay away.
I only muted an elected official because I could not handle all the BYU football posts. It was excessive. And I am sorry I could not handle
it.
I am not telling you.
Come on, who's that?
You could go forever. You could go forever. It wasn't you. It was not you. It was
no.
Okay, let's talk about Hamilton. Everybody loves Hamilton, except those who don't love Hamilton. So our state school board approved the Hamilton education program. Jim, you thought this was great, right?
This is a game changer. What's going to happen with Hamilton in the state of Utah? I mean, in Los Angeles, last week, there was what we are going to do, which is fill that auditorium with 2,600 Title I school children who know the songs. They did it in L.A. The school buses lined up. Children, youngsters, students, it changed their life. They walked in there. They were screaming. That's what's going to happen. Huge praises to those who brought Hamilton to Utah school kids. And big boos to this Joel Wright clown and Cummings clown on the state school board who voted against it because it offends their morality because there were some bad words in it. Give me a break. That could be my gripe.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a good gripe, right? If I was to add my gripe, I would say that there's not enough Republican-friendly news, again, on our delightful sheet here. Every once in a while, I give Emily a hard time, but she's always got these terrible ideas.
Dan, you're an elected Republican. Make some news.
Well, that I may have with my comments earlier about the Attorney General, so at least I got that going for me.
Dan, you got to run for Attorney General.
My gripe is actually...
You want me to run for everything that gets me out of the legislature?
I would say my gripe, it's not quite a gripe. Maybe it's a vote of solidarity. I really thought all of the hashtag MeToo posts over the past couple days have been equally depressing and empowering. It's amazing to watch a lot of women come out and talk about that, how they've dealt with sexual harassment or sexual assault in the workplace or in their everyday lives. And as someone who did a hashtag MeToo, I thought that was a really amazing thing. So that's my gripe slash
I don't know
way to
that
go,
we
ladies.
Will
you're amazing.
Ever be the same. How can you go through thousands of... I saw my sister on there with a Me Too.
That's what I agree. I think there's a lot of change that comes out of this, and it's change for the good.
Yep. Being aware of the problem is the first thing, right? All right. I'm Morgan Lyon-Cotty, filling in for Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I've been joined by Jim DeBacchus on the left and Dan McKay on the right. This program was produced by the wonderful Emily Means. Thank you for joining us.